Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
There's only one quarterback. And so that comes with the territory that we all understand that when you win, you're going to get a lot of praise that you probably shouldn't get. And when you lose, it's the same way. So that said, we all understand that. I understand that as a head coach. We understand that as a team. We know offensively there's a lot of, you know, the magnifying glass is on us because we didn't score enough points. That's what it comes down to, is you have to score touchdowns. You got to score points. You got to be efficient in the red zone. You need to win. That's how quarterbacks are evaluated. And, you know, Mitch in the last 2 years, he's 19-10 as a starter. And so the quote-unquote expectations, you know, the standards that we have, we didn't reach them last year.
That is Bears head coach Matt Nagy. He was a guest on the Rich Eisen show recently, nationally, of course. I'm Mark Grody here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, until 3 o'clock today. 1 hour from now, 2 o'clock, we'll talk to Steve Conroyd, Blackhawks analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. The Bears have an organized team activity on Wednesday. We call them OTAs, for which we are being told that we will have access to the head coach, Matt Nagy, via Zoom, via conference call, and practice will presumably take place that way unless things change drastically between now and Wednesday. Joining us now to discuss the Bears is J.J. Stankovic of NBC Sports Chicago. He covers the Bears on a daily basis. He's also one of the authors of the Under Center podcast. You can find JJ on Twitter at JJ Stankovic, the father of twins. He's JJ. What's going on, man? How are you?
Always good to be on with you, Mark. That's a heck of an introduction.
I try my best. I guess I was feeling my inner Chet Kopic to just really bring as hardcore of an intro as I could. I'm glad that I did it some justice for you. You probably heard Matt Nagy coming in right there with his comments and talking about needing to score more points. And that obviously has really been the theme of the Chicago Bears since Matt Nagy got here. Have you seen any evidence, just based on the offseason moves so far, that the Bears will score more points this year, JJ?
I think they will, because they should have a better quarterback in 2020, whether it's Mitch Trubisky finally taking that next step or Nick Foles taking over as a starter. The Bears should have better than one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL on their roster in 2020. So that'll help. But Mark, I've been growing really wary of the improvements to the run game that I think are necessary for this Bears offense to really start to do what, you know, Matt Nagy came and said he was going to do, which is score points. You know, the offensive line upgrade of Jermaine Ifedi over Rashad Coward, if that's how it shakes out at right guard, is, to me, feels incremental. You're still not replacing Kyle Long at his best. You're not coming close to that. And absent someone on that offensive line taking a big step forward, which, you know, in this case is probably James Daniels, I don't know if they have the offensive line to run the ball. They seem to really be betting on Juan Castillo, the new offensive line coach, and then Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet, as well as Demetrius Harris, the three, you know, big name tight ends they added this offseason, to be the catalyst for running the football. And I just question if that's going to work. Now, we haven't seen it because, like you mentioned, Mark, everything has been going on over Zoom. We will not have our usual practice watching access for OTAs this Wednesday, or really at any point. It seems like maybe we might get a mini camp in there, but I just have a lot of questions about how good this Bears offense can really be in 2020. I think they're going to be better, obviously, than in 2019, where they were one of the four or five worst in the NFL. But to what extent are they going to be league average with a great defense, which gets you probably a pretty good record, a playoff spot, but probably doesn't win you the Super Bowl? Are they going to be better than league average with a great defense? Because that can go win you a Super Bowl. It's to what extent this offense is going to be better is the question that I think we're all looking forward to answering once the season really gets going here.
Yeah, and the Bears have learned, or at least this version of the Bears, they've learned that no matter how good the defense is, and it was damn good in 2018, I'd say elite in 2018, and then good last year, that doesn't get you anywhere if you don't have at least a average to good offense. Let me stay on what you were talking about as far as the running game is concerned, and you got into some really good things about scheme and, you know, Juan Castillo and the way they operate in the run game. Do you think that volume will help, that if they stick with the run game, if they commit to actually handing the ball off, you know, I know they're not going to do old school 30 to 40 times, but they really commit to it, which I don't know that we've ever really seen Matt Nagy do except for a handful of times. Can that help David Montgomery, just that alone, do you think? Volume.
So I think you have to commit with purpose. You can't just commit. You know, I think back to that game against the Broncos in week two, Mark, where, you know, you saw where they ran the ball on the only touchdown drive they had in that game. They ran the ball, I think, on every single play, and it was 9 or 10 plays or whatever it was on that drive. And it was like, okay, we're running the ball. It worked, but I didn't totally feel like there was always a purpose there, like building plays off of those runs. I think a lot of those runs might have been built off of passes, especially like the end around they ran to Cordarrelle Patterson. They ran run to Taylor Gabriel on that. What I want to see the Bears do is build, like, commit to the run, A, and then build passing plays off of it. And that means using play action a whole heck of a lot more. Whether it's from the shotgun or under center, whatever it is, they've got to be able to run the ball and use play action, because that is such an untapped area of this offense. And I know there are some quarterback analysts out there who look at what the Bears are doing and say, like, Mitch Trubisky could still be a decent quarterback in this offense. I was talking to Chris Sims from NBC Sports about this, that's going to be on the Under Center podcast in June. And he said, you know, if you just get Mitch under center and run play action, he could probably be better than he was last year, and maybe even better than he was in 2018. But the problem is that when the Bears run the ball, it just never felt like there was a flow or it was a real purpose for it. It was just like, all right, we ran it, now let's get back to passing. And I think that is where it's got to change. To me, it's not about increasing David Montgomery's volume necessarily. It's about running the ball smarter and building off of runs that way.
Have you had it in your head, because I guess I have, that if Nick Foles is to be the quarterback, if he ultimately wins this supposed quarterback competition, if it is Foles, do you think then that in the back of Nagy's mind, he thinks, okay, I can really run this offense the way I want, and that he will continue to be aggressive and abandoning of the running game? Do you think that will be a temptation to kind of be like, I'll show you that this offense works?
It's going to be a really interesting question, because I don't think Nick Foles, I mean, the quarterback Matt Nagy had to learn and operate this offense was Alex Smith, who in a lot of ways is actually sort of closer to Mitch Trubisky. He's not really all that close to Nick Foles necessarily. I think there are a lot of different things that Nagy can do with Foles just because he trusts him, and he trusts him to get the ball where it needs to go and make the right decision. Not only make the right decisions on plays, but then make the throws. And there's been disconnects there with Mitch where sometimes he'll make the right decision but a bad throw or the wrong decision, and, you know, then it goes downhill from there. I think it's a really interesting question mark of what the Nagy offense would look like with a quarterback who is playing well. And I think the one thing I keep going back to, though, on Foles is that I know I've fallen into this trap where I've just assumed that he's going to be the starter, and I believe he will be, but that doesn't necessarily equate to him being great Nick Foles, the Nick Foles we saw in Philadelphia. You know, this is a guy who doesn't have extensive starting experience, you know, in recent NFL seasons. He's been really good at coming off of the bench and kind of playing pinch hitter or, you know, like a relief pitcher type role, but he hasn't really done it as a starter in a long time. So I think there, you know, if Foles wins the job, I think he's still going to have to prove himself to the city of Chicago, to Matt Nagy, because, you know, while I think Nagy will do a lot and he could have more of a balanced offense in terms of, you know, Foles is able to hit some downfield shots, hit some of the RPOs, that might make a defense back off, and that might allow Nagy to run the ball a little bit more. So, but, you know, Foles still has to do it. I don't think the Bears are in the place right now where they should feel comfortable with whoever is going to be their starting quarterback. Obviously, we'll see what happens when they actually get on the field, but right now I think we kind of need to temper our expectations a little bit about the Bears quarterback situation, because while I said on, you know, earlier in the show, it should be better. Again, I don't know how much better it's going to be.
That's the voice of J.J. Stankovic, he of NBC Sports Chicago. I'm Mark Grody here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score until 3 o'clock. We are definitely talking about the Bears right now. J.J., how do you think the compromised, changed offseason, of which we still don't know what it will completely be, does it favor one or the other quarterback, considering what's going on, the lack of an offseason? Would it favor either Nick Foles or Mitchell Trubisky?
I think it favors Foles very slightly, because he can come in and have the trust of Nagy. You know, Nagy said he kind of has this baseline knowledge. While he doesn't know the ins and outs of it, the wrinkles that have been added since Nagy and Foles were last together, He does know kind of the, you know, the ground floor of it, the football 101 version of it, and can do that very well. And Mitch Trubisky has not shown a consistent ability to do the basics of this offense well or anything above the basics. I think Mitch has to have a really, really good camp to win this job. I don't think he can go in and be, you know, a little bit above average and Foles is average. I think Foles still might start in that case. I think the problem is that Mitch needs as much practice time as possible to prove to coaches that the last 3 years, you know, the last two, three years have been an aberration, and that, okay, now he's ready to kind of take off and be the guy the Bears were hoping he would be 3 years ago. Foles doesn't need that. Everyone knows what he did in the Super Bowl. Everyone knows what he did with the Eagles, and that will carry a lot of weight, that Foles has had significant success at the NFL at high levels of this game. And I think that just gives him kind of a bit of immediate credibility in this competition. But I do think it's pretty even overall. I think that the Bears got Foles in a way because they knew he would provide the most even quarterback competition. If you got Andy Dalton, say, okay, Andy Dalton only knows Bill Lazor a little bit, I think he knows a little bit of John DeFilippo, but, you know, mostly Bill Lazor. Mm-hmm. Whereas Nick Foles knows Bill Lazor, Matt Nagy, John DeFilippo, that, you know, will kind of allow him to really compete with Mitch. If it were another guy like Dalton or Jameis Winston or whoever, that guy doesn't know the offense. That guy doesn't come in with the baseline. And I think Mitch would then have the advantage if it were going up against one of those, you know, other guys. But I think in this case, Foles actually winds up with the advantage because he has that baseline knowledge of the offense and might actually have less to prove.
And as you correctly said at the beginning of this, I mean, so much of the success of the offense is incumbent upon, based upon the offensive line, whether or not it gets better as it is, you know, currently put together. They are dependent upon this year growth from within, you know, this side of Jermaine Ifedi most likely taking over for Rashad Coward. That said, to add on to this, JJ, do you think there is possibly still a move up the Bears' sleeve in adding to that offensive line before the season hopefully starts?
Never say never, because what was it, 4 years ago, Josh Sitton just fell into their lap out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And moved Cody Whitehair to center like a day before the season started. So, you know, never say never. Ryan Pace will, if he feels like there is a player out there who can improve his offensive line that becomes available before the season starts, I think he's going to go out and get it. I think right now, you know, when Larry Warford got released by the Saints, there was a lot of chatter about, oh, you know, they might go get him. And, you know, Larry Warford would be an upgrade at right guard, sure. But I think the Bears, That would be a little bit premature. That would be like blowing up a plan before you really should, because you haven't seen any of these guys on the practice field. You haven't seen if Rashad Coward maybe can take to Juan Castillo's coaching and, you know, use his athletic profile to become a more polished guard. You haven't seen if Jermaine Ifedi, you know, the former first-round pick who does have a lot of talent, can come in and maybe, you know, take to Juan Castillo's coaching. I don't think that would be very fair. I think that would reflect poorly on the Bears if they were to do one of those things. So I think that, you know, it would be a move that would happen probably around cutdown day, maybe sometime in training camp if a guy gets released earlier. But I know, Mark, I would not totally rule that out, because Ryan Pace has done it before.
Let's move to the defensive side of the ball. I feel like we just kind of leave the defense alone because they were, like I said, great 2 years ago. Good, in my opinion, last year. Is there any reason, as you look at the defense right now, JJ, any reason to think that they won't be what we think they're going to be, and that is at least a good defense with the possibility of being an elite defense?
Yeah, I mean, the way you come to that conclusion that they won't be one of the better defenses in the NFL is if you really are worried about their depth. And you know, if injuries were to take their toll, that can happen to any defense. And the Bears' depth, though, I am a little wary about, because last year they, you know, Nick Williams on the defensive line, an incredibly good depth piece, the exact kind of guy you want to come in when a big guy like Akeem Hicks goes down, but they were still worse off. You know, you can't really lose Akeem Hicks and expect to be a top five defense. You know, and behind some of the other guys, you know, at, you know, Khalil Mack, you've got Barkevious Mingo, you know, Travis Gibson, some younger guys. I think their depth is probably in a decent place, but, you know, that can only take you so far. You know, another guy last year, like Nick Kwiatkowski, played awesome when he needed to come in and play for, you know, various reasons. And again, the Bears are still worse off. So it's a matter of, like, is there, and those two guys are gone, Nick Williams and Nick Kwiatkowski. So,
and Juan Pierre-Lewis, too.
And Kevin Pierre-Lewis, who was really good last year, too. You're absolutely right, Mark. So if you're worried about depth, I get it. But from a top-end talent perspective, I mean, the moves that they were able to make with Robert Quinn, obviously, at the top of that, but then going out and drafting Jalen Johnson, signing Tashawn Gibson, shores up the two other major needs that that team had from player one to player 11 on that starting defense. I think it is, from a talent perspective, one of the three best in the NFL. Maybe one of the two best if you, you know, just them in San Francisco. And I think, you know, year two with Chuck Pagano coaching them, don't discount that, you know, it might be a little bit easier for guys like Eddie Jackson, Roquan Smith, Danny Trevathan, Akeem Hicks, all these guys to kind of, okay, you know, we kind of get a little bit more of where Chuck's coming from here. After, you know, 1 year, that does matter a little bit. And I think that shouldn't be totally discounted here.
Can we talk about for a second just about how awesome it is that I just gave Kevin Pierre-Lewis a Juan Pierre mention, the former speedy Chicago Cub and Chicago White Sox? How great was that?
Mm-hmm. You know, anytime you can work Juan Pierre into a football discussion, I mean, you're talking about a dude who is like, what, 5'10" and 150 pounds? Like,
yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
I mean, he's kind of Darnell Mooney, isn't he? I mean, he's got that kind of speed that's the same size, right?
Yeah, good save. You know, same speed. I don't know if Darnell Mooney is a good bunter, but, you know, I'm sure they could steal some bases.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm proud of that little moment. I know that you're a big baseball guy too, as am I. So I'm glad that we got to share that moment right there. One other question on the defensive side of the ball. One of the things that I am excited about was the addition of Tashawn Gibson. And I say that because I think he's a good player and because of the fact that they have had the guy who plays with Eddie Jackson at that safety position has had success. Adrian Amos was a nice match. Haha, Clinton Dix had a decent year for the Bears last year, went on to make money in Dallas, and now it's Tashawn Gibson. How did you like that pickup?
I liked it just because I like the idea of, you know, having that veteran next to Eddie Jackson. Gibson is interesting because I think my assumption was that the Bears are going to go out and get that kind of like true in the box safety, you know, and not that Adrian Amos was a true in the box safety, but Adrian Amos was good when he played in the box, and a guy who's maybe leans that way has the flexibility to play deep, but can, you know, his real strength is playing toward the line. And Gibson told us, Mark, if you remember a couple of weeks ago, that his most comfortable position is playing that deep center field spot where Eddie Jackson is really good. And I'm interested how Chuck Pagano goes about it, because I think last year if the Bears are taking a long-term approach to Eddie Jackson, which is not the dumbest thing to do, they turned Eddie Jackson into a great all-around safety last year. They didn't turn him into an all-pro, but they turned him into a guy who could comfortably play at the line of scrimmage, make tackles for a loss, stop the run, and do some of the things that were quote-unquote weaknesses of his game when he was coming out of Alabama. Now I think they got to get him back to that center field role, the one where he was an all-pro, but with the knowledge that, hey, we can now get this guy toward the line of scrimmage and do different things with him because he showed it last year. Gibson, you know, he can play to the line of scrimmage. He can play in the box a little bit more. The big thing, Mark, the big point I want to make here is that when the Bears go single high safety, a lot of the time last year it was Haha Clinton Dix as that single high safety. This year, I really think that's got to be Eddie Jackson to just maximize those ball hawking opportunities and his ability to change a game once he gets the ball in his hands. I think that is where the Bears need to kind of get Eddie Jackson. That doesn't mean he's playing deep on every single play, but when you go single high, get it, you know, get Gibson closer to the line and get Eddie Jackson back deep.
Yeah, the point that you made about Eddie Jackson too, that is fantastic. It's so true that even though it didn't look right at times last year with Eddie Jackson in terms of his positioning, and everybody wants to see the flash and the pick sixes, including Eddie Jackson, but I didn't really look at it that way, that he learned last year, and he might have, in a sneaky way, even though he still was a Pro Bowler, he may have become a better player last year. I hadn't even thought about it that way, JJ.
Yeah, one of the last conversations I had with a player before I went on parental leave was with Eddie Jackson about that topic. It was right before the Lions game on Thanksgiving when he didn't have an interception at that point. He got one late in the game when David Blau threw, you know, just a duck at the end. But he didn't have an interception, and I was talking to him about it. And, you know, I looked at the numbers, and he was playing the fewest percentage of snaps deep in of his career. And he was kind of like, look, of course I want, you know, I like getting interceptions. I love having the ball in my hands. That's where I feel like I can make the biggest impact. But I like stopping the run, too. And, you know, then I popped over to Haha Clinton Dix, whose locker was right next to Eddie's. And Haha was telling me, like, look, everyone knew what Eddie could do. Everyone knows he can ball hawk. He can, you know, pick off passes deep. But now everyone knows Eddie can play toward the line of scrimmage, too. And he's like, you better watch out for this guy the rest of his career because he can do everything, and he can do it at a really high level now.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, it's a great point. All right, this is the last question for real. I'm just going to last question you to death. Do you think, like I think, Roquan Smith is poised to have just a – I thought he was going to have a huge season last year, but we know he had behind-the-scenes issues, and then he had the torn pectoral muscle. I think he's going to have a monster year this year. Do you agree with that or not?
I hope so. He's a guy who has everything you want in an inside linebacker, you know, from his physicality to his speed, to his athletic profile, to his football IQ. You know, they're all really good. So I don't see a reason why Roquan Smith shouldn't break out this year. You know, if he's healthy from that torn pectoral, which guys, you know, it's a pretty rough injury, but guys can come back from that. You know, he should be a guy who, look, if Roquan Smith is playing at an all-pro level on the Bears defense in 2020, this is probably one of the best two defenses in the NFL. If they get, if Roquan Smith takes that jump and you still have Akeem Hicks, Khalil Mack, Kyle Fuller, Eddie Jackson, Eddie Goldman, Danny Trevathan, who did I forget? The other guy I'm forgetting here because there are so many good players on this defense. Jalen Johnson, I think, is going to be really good.
Yeah.
There's some,
Robert Bilal, too. I don't know if you mentioned him, but.
Yeah, right.
Quinn, but, yes.
This defense is just so stacked that if they were to get a guy kind of taking that natural third-year leap in it, I mean, good God, watch out for how good it's going to be. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Bears are hoping Roquan can do that, and I don't see a reason why Roquan can't do that.
All right, JJ, have the Twins done anything hilarious lately? Anything we need to know about the Twins?
They started eating solid food, which is just like soupy rice cereal. And it's going great in that they're, you know, it's extremely messy, but very cute. So that's been a fun little development around here in the Stankovitz household is the Twins started to take solid food.
That's a big step, man. Well, thank you, JJ, for joining us. And I'm sure that I will see your face on a Zoom call later on this week when the Bears get together for OTAs.
Wear your best 670 The Score branded polo or quarter zip to fit in with everyone.
All right, bro. I'll talk to you later, man.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
You got it. That is JJ Stankovitz, NBC Sports Chicago, covers the Bears, and he gives you something, man. Good stuff from JJ. Follow him on Twitter at JJ Stankovitz. He's also part of the Under Center podcast. That was a great point. I had not looked at it that way with Eddie Jackson. That, you know, Eddie Jackson was on The Score once a week with McNeil and Parkins, and it felt like such a big part of it was, okay, the defense is good, you're good, but where's the picks, man? Where's the interceptions? Where's the flash? And it was kind of like he didn't know, nobody knew. What we learned or found out was to see two players doing similar things in Clinton Dix and Eddie Jackson and not fighting over it, but trying to position themselves properly. And some of it required that Eddie Jackson do things that Adrian Amos had done the previous year and that Adrian Amos, quite frankly, was good at and happy to do. Like that's where Adrian Amos thrived, in that strong safety spot, being closer up and more in the box, and let Eddie, like, honestly, a better combo was Eddie Jackson and Adrian Amos and not Eddie Jackson and Clinton Dix. And things are going to have to change. I mean, there's going to have to be a little bit of acquiescing this year for Sean Gibson, that he's going to need to know his place. And you know what? This falls on Chuck Pagano. That Chuck Pagano has to, and now that he's had a year to look and understand and know how to position them correctly and know what is best, I think that's going to be helpful. You know that Chuck Pagano is well studied and has all the credibility in the world, but this is one of those times where it is definitely on him. I'm Mark Grody here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am with you here until 3 o'clock today. If you'd like to participate in the show, that'd be cool. 312-644-6767 is the number for both calling and for texting and for tweeting. You just look up my name. At Mark Grody Sports is the way to go about that. Coming up in about a half an hour, we will talk to Steve Conroy, see what is on his mind as it pertains to the NHL and his potential comeback, and specifically the Chicago Blackhawks. We'll talk a lot about the Chicago Blackhawks. Coming up next, though, I want to give you my moodometer, where my mood is on baseball today, because it seems, at least for me, I don't know how you are, I am volatile with baseball more than any other sport for a number of different reasons. I'll tell you where I am next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced. Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
One trouble here is there's no deadline. But even when the spring training was shut down on the 12th of March, the regular season was supposed to start the 26th. So they waited the deadline and got it all done in 2 weeks. So there's no deadline here. Negotiations just started on Tuesday with the proposal. So, you know, they could start the season they wanted to in August, when they could do a tournament in no regular season, you know, in September, October. So, you know, the more it goes on, you know, the fewer games. But I think that is a little bit of a problem, that there's no just drop dead date where, you know, they could start the season in August and we still have baseball.
Welcome back into Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. I'm Mark Rohde. That was the voice of Bob Nightingale of USA Today. He was recently on 670, The Score, on our Inside the Clubhouse program featuring Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel. I'm here until 3 o'clock today, at which time Zach Zaidman and Ron Coomer are in. They'll be in here again starting at 3 o'clock, and I see that on their guest list, I've broken into their guest list, and I see that nice guy Jim Thome, the Hall of Famer, will be on their show, as will the great Chris Chelios, great with the Blackhawks, great with the Red Wings as well. I am going to have some hockey talk coming up at the top of the hour with one of my favorites, Steve Conroy, the former Blackhawks defenseman and current analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. I feel really good about the Blackhawks. We'll get into that in just a little bit. Meantime, my mood changes day to day on whether or not I think there will be baseball in 2020. This is going on for a long time in my brain, and not just because of the recent negotiations or lack thereof. It's been going on for a long time with baseball, and more so with other sports. Today, I'm having a bad baseball day. John Heyman is not helping. I just looked at his Twitter, and this is just from a short while ago. Let me see. Let me bring this up. Proper. That's an MC Hammer line. Proper. No evidence of progress yet, John Heyman tweets. In MLB, players talk, so no realistic hope to meet the soft deadline of tomorrow, June 1. Tomorrow is June. That deadline was soft for a reason, and hope remains to start the season July 4th weekend if a deal can be done by the range of June 5 to June 9. Here's another tweet from Heyman now. MLB seems adamant about ending regular season by about October 1st. One, he says, the postseason is vital and there's concern about the second wave. MLB TV contracts are for October. Three, there may be more NFL NBA competition by November 1st, so players' preference for 100 to 120 games over proposed 82 will not fly. I'm really happy about that. 100 to 120 games would be ridiculous and dumb. That the great thing that they have going here right now is that if baseball is to be played, 82 games will be great. It's a wonderful way to test the urgency that will create, 82 games. And if that's something that down the line in the future will be a test run for potentially lobbing games off of the 162-game schedule, which you know I think is obnoxious. And I thought that even when I was on the Cubs tour for 3 years as pre- and post-game host, 162 games is too many games. When you have something in a sport that you call the dog days, as in these days suck, then some of those games should be eliminated. I don't want to take money out of anybody's pocket, but I do think that when you create more urgency, you create more interest, and then somehow you create more dollars. That's the economic plan that I set forth and that I believe in. And that, yeah, I know I always get shot down on the money matter, but if you make your sport more interesting, if you reach out to more eyeballs, younger eyeballs, quantity and quality when it comes to the viewers, then you're going to get more cash in your pocket no matter how many games you want. So here's what it has been with me throughout the baseball process. There's always been this part in the back of my brain where I was thinking that when the players and owners began to negotiate financial terms of a potential comeback, the thought was, considering everything going on, that the negotiating might be clean and that compromise would rule the talks, a hometown discount, if you will, that could have come from either or both sides. That was something, not something that I expected, nor something that I was demanding or righteously thinking should be, just something that I was hoping for. And based on what is going on, the times in which we live, based on the virus that we are living through and dying from, that maybe there would be a different tone to the negotiations and a different demeanor, but there's not. Not even close. It is as contentious as ever, just like any negotiation. And quite frankly, it's the way it should be. I'm not mad at these guys. I don't blame them. Everybody wants their piece of the pie. You listening right now, you want your piece of the pie. I want mine, man. I have, like my colleagues have, like many of you have, I have taken a pay cut. I am living the pay cut lifestyle. I don't like it. I don't want this to be the case. I want my money back. And if I had a better way to get it back, I would go for it, but I don't. So we play along, but if you could get yours, you would get yours. So I understand. There is so much to trudge through, though. A lot of back and forth still to go down, as John Heyman giving us our latest here just a short while ago. And at this point, I don't see a benefit in either side giving in. There are credible things on both sides that they want and need and feel is justified. And then if you do get through that, so we're just talking about the negotiating, this is why I can't stay or haven't been able, as much as I want to stay positive about baseball, because that's the sport that out of any of them that I want to see personally and selfishly more than any of them right now. If you do get through the negotiations, then you're just back to the other issues and the 67 pages of health and safety protocol. And having spoken to former big leaguers like Ron Coomer, who's going to be on the score starting at 3 o'clock with Zach Zaven, you know, when I brought up the idea that play, and it sounds ridiculous and silly, but when I brought up the idea that these players, 20, let's just say on average, 25-year-olds, are going to have to change their habits drastically, things that almost feel involuntary, like spitting, you know, getting close to guys, giving each other a pat on the behind, whatever it is, chewing tobacco, sunflower seeds, chewing gum, whatever, talking to your third base coach, that kind of protocol is not going to be easy to demand and ask for and expect compliance. And Coom, when I brought it up, he just kind of sighed and said, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that's realistic to ask. I don't know if that's something that they're going to be able to follow. And then if you don't follow it, and by the way, it's going to be really awkward to regulate those kind of things too. So it's going to be up to players to regulate themselves and to just follow the rules, almost like etiquette more than a rule. If you do get through that, then we're back to, what if somebody gets the virus? what if somebody gets it? And there is no plan for that. I don't know what happens. You don't know what happens. They don't know what happens. You get the virus, and what are they? Well, we're going to shut it down for 2 weeks. Do they ever come back? Can they come back? Does that mean, you know, multiple people have it? You know, so it's just there is a wave of complications in baseball that have kept me on this volatile road. And it's not a good feeling for me today on this day. And I hate it because baseball is going to be a blast in this town. Let's just get it local here, man. It's going to be a blast for both teams. As bad as it sounded for the Cubs in the offseason, the reckoning, and I guess that was two offseasons ago, but the whole, like, up until COVID-19, the offseason was about Chris Bryant and will the Cubs trade Chris Bryant or would they trade somebody from the core. That ain't happening. The Cubs are coming back. Last dance for the Cubs. I don't see some sort of bombastic, eye-popping move by the Cubs. So you are going to have that core together once again, you know, with some starting to become veteran pitching staff, you know, John Lester leading in that regard. And in the veteran, you know, everybody wants to see what Yu Darvish can do after having a strong second half of the season. If they play, it becomes really intriguing to see what the Cubs have left in that core. And are they motivated by that? Do things change with an 82-game schedule and that thing? And then there is just pure, it is pure. Like, that's the right word for the White Sox. There's a pureness to the excitement with the Chicago White Sox because expectations are high, but they are not assumed, nor are they necessarily, they're not at the point of demanding excellence from the White Sox. You're expecting it, you're hoping for it, and you're thinking it's probably going to be pretty good, but there's not this, like, you got to go to the World Series or bust like it is with the Cubs. This is the rise for the White Sox, and it's Luis Robert. And is Yoan Moncada what he was last year? Do we get another level? Do we start to see MVP type of Yoan Moncada, and then some of those young starters, and, you know, Dylan Cease? It was a little bumpy for Dylan Cease last year, but I still have a heck of a lot of faith in that guy considering the tools that he has. There's just so much to be excited about with the White Sox. So it would suck. It would just suck if there wasn't to be baseball in the city of Chicago. Baseball right here on 670 The Score. I mean, I love hearing 2016 games. Every once in a while, I'll pop on the radio if I'm driving around and I'll hear me giving a sports update and saying, Pat, thanks, Mark. And hearing Pat and Ron call a game in 2016, there is something comforting about it. There's something therapeutic about it. But I know, I mean, those of you who are big baseball fans, and I am one of them, there is a rhythm that is lost right now. And, you know, a lifestyle, a feeling is not here right now. And I just, like I said, maybe tomorrow, maybe things change for me. But right now I don't feel good about baseball coming back in 2020, but we shall see. 312-644-6767 is the number. That is also the way to text us. 312-644-6767 is the number. I see some of your text messages coming in, like, how is the Bears O-line better this year? I think that was actually a while ago. That was like 42 minutes ago. How is the Bears offensive line better this year? We talked about that with J.J. Stankovic, and that the one, and it is just a tweak, and that is Jermaine Ifedi taking over the guard spot for Rashad Coward, probably. I mean, we're talking about it like that's fait accompli, but it's not necessarily. It just seems like the Bears have conceded that he's still a work in progress. That is Rashad Coward, and at this point, with the urgency that exists with the defense still opening you an open window, you probably want a sure thing on that offensive line. But we shall see. When we return, I'll give you the latest on what is going on in the city of Chicago. Just a few bullet points on what has happened today. We're not going to dwell on it, but I am going to report the facts and report the news to you. We had Jennifer Kuiper on from WBBM a little bit earlier. I will tell you what she told us and how things are going out there. Everything feels relatively peaceful right now. We're also going to talk to Steve Conroy about the Blackhawks and the NHL coming up at 2 o'clock. I'm Mark Grody. I am here with you until 3 o'clock. On Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Mark Grody back with you here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. I'm here with you until 3 o'clock, talking hockey with Steve Conroy at the top of the hour, 2 o'clock. Cons will join us, the Blackhawks analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. Obviously, we will talk Blackhawks and the NHL and their potential return to play. The Bulls have released a statement. I'll tell you about that here in just a second. Mayor Lori Lightfoot earlier today, too, announced that Governor J.B. Pritzker has ordered a contingent of the National Guard to maintain a limited presence in support of the Chicago Police Department. No CTA trains, buses in and out of the loop. Only residents and employees of essential business permitted with that set of boundaries. And in my conversation earlier today with WBBM's Jennifer Kuiper, she told us that phase three of the city reopening is obviously compromised at this point, which was a fear that I had had in the back of my mind. All right, let's see here. I want to bring this up. This is a statement from the Chicago Bulls. At the top of it, it says, and we're all reading this together for the first time, "We at the Chicago Bulls organization are committed to working together to stand for real change. We can do this together, Nancy and Michael Reinsdorf." There is more. The following statement is from Nancy Reinsdorf, president of the Chicago Bulls Charities, and Michael Reinsdorf, president and COO of the Chicago Bulls. Quote, "The events of the past weeks have been disturbing and challenging for us all. The deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery, as well as the incident with Christian Cooper, were gut-wrenching and heartbreaking. The Bulls organization sends our condolences to these families who have been caused unthinkable grief and to all of those who suffer because of these terrible incidents. All too often," it goes on to say, "after these tragedies, we talk, but the conversations don't result in any meaningful changes. Our communities can't move forward or hope for peace when we're constantly hitting the reset button after each incident. Everyone deserves to feel safe, to be respected, and to be able to reach their full potential. Unfortunately, that's not the kind of world we live in. We are angry, sad, and confused. Racism in any form is wrong, and what we see happening makes us want to take action. We know that's the same for a lot of people, but anger isn't about destruction. Lawless actions won't bring better understanding, and they don't honor the lives that have been lost. We should use our energy and efforts to come together to build a better Chicago that stands for equality and justice for all." Final graph right here. There is a crisis in our country, and we need to redouble our efforts and work harder than ever. We have to rise above all of our differences and come together and affect real change for the future. Otherwise, we're going to see the past repeat itself again. We have to listen to each other, act with love, and be intentional and relentless in our pursuit of a better world. It is time. We at the Chicago Bulls organization are committed to working together to stand for real change. Last sentence, we can do this together. And again, that is a joint statement from the Chicago Bulls and specifically Nancy Reinsdorf, president of Chicago Bulls Charities, and Michael Reinsdorf, president and COO of the Chicago Bulls. Well said. Well said. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will talk hockey with Steve Conroy, Blackhawks analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. I'm Mark Grody, and this is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe? Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.